You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday, the 22nd of October, 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. Well, it looks like Max Musson is having some technical issues today, so we were unable to connect, so you've just got myself for today, which of course means the show will be in two parts, and we will have a musical break halfway through. But we are going to concentrate on one subject today, and that is white slaves and their Muslim masters. And in the first half, we're going to look at this trial that's just taken place in Huddersfield now that the reporting restrictions have been lifted. And in the second half, we're going to have a look at just what it is about Islam that encourages slavery and just how much of it has gone on over the centuries, and why this should not be any surprise to any of us that this is what's going on in Britain at the moment. Well, of course, this case has really been highlighted thanks to Tommy Robinson getting jailed for trying to report on it. We're not going to go into whether that was just or unjust in today's podcast, but we will mention him a few times and also his comments on this. The mainstream articles are linking him with it and talking about him. So that just shows that he did do a good thing there, because he did draw this trial to the attention of the nation. Tommy Robinson has celebrated the jailing of 19 Muslim rapists and one Sikh, who just happened to be the ringleader, after a grooming gang that targeted vulnerable white girls as young as 11 in Huddersfield were jailed for a combined total of more than 220 years. So that's an average of about 10 years each, so they'll be out after 5 years. So that's really not that much when you think about it. When you think this is a gang that turned these young girls into sex slaves, passed them around, all their filthy brothers, cousins, uncles, drove them around the country, got them hooked on heroin, threatened to leave them out on the moors at night. And in some cases, they did leave these girls out on the moors at night. And farmers would wake up to hear a knock at the door, and they would find a child, a young white child, on their doorstep, where these Muslims had just dropped them off in the car. And as I say, all they will get for that is an average of 5 years in prison. It's really not enough, is it? They should all be deported. I mean, rape isn't a crime in Islamic countries, but you could say that murder is probably a similar crime, similar amount of punishment that you get. And if you were to murder somebody over there in an Islamic country, then you would expect to be beheaded. You would expect to be murdered yourself, or you would expect to be executed for your crime. And yet these Muslims can come over here to our countries, they can enslave our young white girls, rape them, turn them into prostitutes, and all they get is 5 years. And when they come out, they will be looked after by the council. There's been no mention of any of these rapists being deported for what they've actually done. It just says that they're going to get a combined total of 220 years. As with similar cases in a string of British towns and cities, the gang plied their victims, some of whom were as young as 11, with alcohol or drugged them before carrying out horrific sex attacks. Now, this is where this idea of paedophilia comes in. You think, well these girls, they're 11 years old. How could they do this? Well, this is culturally acceptable in Islam. Don't forget, Muhammad's wife, Aisha, his favourite wife, she was 9 years old. 9 years old. So that's what they look to, as Muhammad is the perfect man. Anything Muhammad did, they should be copying, they should be doing the same. So an 11-year-old is fair game to them. Also, you've got the fact that these are white girls that they're talking about, not brown girls. So they look down on them and think that they're dirt anyway. They think they're just there for them to abuse. And this isn't just Muslims. This is anyone from a third world country. If you think about Africa, you may have Africans over here or over there. They're not Muslims. They're not Christians, but they have seen pornography. And what have they seen in pornography? They've seen white women, the women that they find most attractive, and they see these white women behaving like whores. And then they come to Europe and they see these white women dressed like the ones that they've seen in these films, and they think that they are whores, and they have no respect for them whatsoever. I mean, we are saying that this is Islamic grooming gangs, but really it's a racial thing. It's a non-white thing to be looking at whites as if they're a highly prized possession, basically, is what they want. I mean, that's what the slavery is all about. It's the highly prized white women that they want to have as slaves. There's never any question of them being intimately connected with these white girls, although the girls do think that at first. They are taken in by these older men that buy them things and make them feel special. And they think that they are their girlfriend at first. And then they get them hooked on heroin. And of course, once they're hooked on heroin, they'll do anything for their fix. They will literally do anything to get their heroin. And that this is what is so twisted about this. It's all thought out right from the very beginning, from when they first offer these girls free chips in the kebab shop. Don't forget, a lot of them are working in these kebab shops. They're working in the minicabs, taxi companies. So they get talking to these girls when they are at school, and they prey on them. And instead of warning our young girls in the schools never to talk to these people because they are a threat to them, they are told, oh, it's nothing to do with religion. It's nothing to do with non-whites. All men are a threat. You should be treating all men as if they are a threat. You can't single out these non-whites. Well, every one of these gangs has been non-white. And we'll find out there's been about a dozen instances of this up and down the country. It seems that there isn't a city in Britain that does not have these non-white grooming gangs operating within it. The court heard evidence from 15 victims during the trials, and the judge said he fears none of them will ever recover from their ordeals. In victim statements, the girls described coming into contact with the abusers after being bullied at school, and said the relationship became one of those things that you couldn't get out of. So they're really finding these girls when they're feeling quite vulnerable. They're often from social classes that feel excluded. And this is the first time that anyone's ever made them feel special. Some of them are being abused at home as well. And they think that these guys are going to help them out. And then they just find that they are even worse abusers than what's been happening to them at home. And of course, then when they've gone to the police have ignored them. The police have just thought that they're drug addicts and they're just making this stuff up. And of course, the police don't want to be accused of being racist either. They want to appear to be culturally sensitive. So they've ignored everything that's been said to them. And the only reason that these cases have been investigated now is because there's been two decades worth of the right wing pushing to have these cases investigated, particularly Tommy Robinson, but also the BNP. When that was around, Nick Griffin and Mark Cullett both did a lot to try and draw attention to this. And it's because of them that these cases are now being investigated. But do the mainstream media, do they show any respect for that? Do they show any gratitude for that? No, they don't. They attack Tommy Robinson for supposedly endangering this trial, which he certainly didn't do. He was just reading out articles that had already appeared online. EDL founder Robinson, who was jailed for contempt of court after posting a video trying to draw attention to the scandal, claimed without providing evidence that one defendant on the run had fled to Pakistan. Well, where do they think these people are going to run to? China? Is it Chinese grooming gangs? No, it isn't. 80-90% of the Muslims involved in these grooming gangs are Pakistani. So of course they're going to run off to Pakistan if they're not caught in Britain and they're put on bail. That's exactly where they're going to run to. It's just common sense. The pattern of exploitation of mainly white girls by groups of men of mainly Pakistani heritage mirrors what has happened in a number of other towns around the country, including Rotherham, Rochdale, and Telford. And we've covered Rochdale and Telford and Rotherham, I believe, here on either on Aryan Britannia or SS Britannia or Radio Aryan Britannia over the years. Each time one of these scandals has happened, and you just think, well, how can they still be going on? How can it still be going on? The only reason it's still going on is because the country is still full of Muslims and non-whites. The abuse, which centred in Huddersfield, West Yorkshire, took place in cars, car parks, houses, a snooker centre, a takeaway, a park, and other places, the court heard. And this is where they were just trafficking these girls around, trafficking them around the country. As I said, they left them on the moors to be found by farmers. Terrified, absolutely terrified. And you're thinking a 13, 14-year-old girl who's been taken out. She says, I don't want to have sex with you guys. This is wrong. And they say, well, we're just going to leave you out here in the cold then. And they just dump these girls off in the moors. Thankfully, obviously, farmers are still white and the white farmers have looked after them. But they just thought, what the hell is going on? What are these white children doing being found out here in the middle of nowhere? In the middle of the night, what's going on? And they were reporting it. Still nothing was done about it. At least one of the victims attempted suicide, and another had to have an abortion after becoming pregnant, prosecutor Richard Wright, QC, told the jury. Well, good girl. It's horrible that she had to have an abortion, but she certainly did the right thing there. The men referred to each other using a series of nicknames. And I'll just interrupt here because some people may say, well, you're against abortions, Sven, so how can you say this is okay? Well, I don't agree with mixing of the races. I don't agree with the mongrelization of the races. And if they can be aborted, then I think, yes, that is a good thing. You have prevented another corruption of the laws of nature from walking on this earth and spawning other corruptions. This girl has protected her white nation by having an abortion. She's had to do a terrible thing there and had to make a terrible choice, and she's done the right thing, and she's put the needs of everybody else in her white nation ahead of her own desire to have a child. Obviously, the child would have been, its father would have been one of these rapists as well. But we do hear of some cases where people do have children by their rapist and they love the child. But in this case, it would have been a mixed race abomination that she would have been loosing upon the world. So good on her for doing that. The men referred to each other using a series of nicknames, Beastie, Dracula, and Nurse, which were also used as their monikers during the trials. Ringleader Amir Singh Dhaliwal, 35, was jailed for life earlier this year and told he must serve a minimum of 18 years in prison by a judge who said your treatment of these girls was inhuman. Now, this guy is a Sikh. And don't forget, we're always being told that it's Muslims, and these Muslims, they also go after Sikh girls. Well, not in this case. The ringleader of this gang was a Sikh, and all the rest of them were Muslims. This is a non-white thing. It's not just a religious thing. I mean, Islam is a non-white religion, and of course it justifies it. But why does it justify it? It justifies it because it's natural behaviour for non-whites to behave like this. Dhaliwal, who is married with children and converted to the Sikh religion 5 years ago, carried out some of the gang's most sickening abuse. He often took video footage of the abuse taking place to share and distribute with other non-whites. He also forced one victim to perform a sex act with a bottle during a supposed game of truth or dare that he organised. Another member of the grooming gang, Sajid Hussain, known as Fish, went on the run from the trial held at Leeds Crown Court and was sentenced in his absence. He had been recognised by his victim in a shop after he had served her while she was wearing her school uniform. He was convicted for raping one of the victims when she was just 14 years old. And he was allowed to escape because these people were just all put on bail. You think about the young lads that are being accused of being members of National Action that are languishing in prison for up to a year before their trials are actually heard, that are no threat to the public whatsoever. And yet we've got these brutal non-white rapists who have left DNA evidence that they are guilty of the rape, and they are still working in the kebab shops and the takeaways in our cities, so that these girls that have been raped end up discovering that that's where they are, and that's where these people work. These dirty men that they were forced to have sex with, they discover them when they go into a takeaway in the next city along. And they discover that none of these rapists have actually been put in prison, but they're just out on bail. So, of course, then they're able to escape. And don't forget, Britain First were jailed for highlighting that this is what was going on. There was a gang rape took place in a kebab shop. The young girl that was raped, she gave forensic evidence to the police. It was proved, the forensic evidence proved that she was raped by the people in this kebab shop. And instead of them being put on remand, they were still allowed to work in the kebab shop, still allowed to work there in the local takeaway with all the school kids going in there after school to pick their chips up. And Britain First courageously tried to warn the population in that area that their children were at risk. And Jada and Paul Golding both got 6 months for their trouble. 6 months. For their trouble. Incidentally, Jez Turner, who is in jail at the moment for pointing out Jewish crimes at the Shomrim demonstration, he was given a year. His early parole has just come up, and he's turned it down because it would have meant that he would have not been able to have anything to do with any nationalists, not talk to any nationalists, not go on any nationalist sites. And of course, he can't accept that. And then you've got Anjem Chowdhury, who is also up for his early parole, and he's allowed out, and he's allowed to go to mosques, and he's allowed to talk to Muslims, and they draw a distinction between extremist Muslims and normal Muslims. But they don't draw any distinction between extremist nationalists and civic nationalists or just normal nationalists like UKIP. I mean, Jez Turner wouldn't be allowed to attend a UKIP meeting if he came out. You can see the inconsistency in the way that the two peoples are being dealt with here. You've got a Muslim terrorist who is allowed out and is allowed to continue seeing all his Muslim buddies. And you've got somebody who's never been accused of any terrorism. All he's in there for is speaking about the Jewish role in World War II, and he's not allowed to speak to any of his friends if he comes out. It's also interesting that this Anjem Chowdhury has been put in a bail hostel in London. I just hope it's not the same bail hostel as Jada Frantzen, because I really wouldn't put it past the authorities to deliberately engineer that, because she's not allowed to talk to any of her friends from Britain First. She's not allowed to talk to any nationalists, and obviously Jez is, you know, he's decided he's going to do that extra time. He's going to do that extra time because it's so important to be able to talk to your friends. And we've done nothing wrong. We are the good guys in this. We are the good guys in this that are being unjustly jailed. Getting back to this article, all of the victims were vulnerable because of family and other circumstances, the court was told. Describing the brown men's activities, the prosecutor, Mr. Wright, QC, said, "The way children like this were groomed by men like the defendants is very simple. They identify a vulnerable child who is socially isolated and not well supported by friends and family. Then they befriend that child and make them feel special, whether that be by simply appearing as someone who wants to spend time with them, or by flattery, or by plying them with drink and drugs. And I think that's the way that it actually works. First off, they pretend that they want to spend time with them. They flatter them, make them feel special. And then as it progresses, then they start slipping things. They buy them drinks and they start slipping things in their drinks. Then they put heroin in a roll up cigarette, tell them that it's just cannabis, get them hooked on that. And, you know, there's been cases where people have literally climbed out of their windows from their family homes to get their fix because they were addicted to this stuff. And the only way that they could be given the stuff that they were addicted to is if they had sex with all these filthy creatures that they were forced to have sex with. How can this be going on in our countries? How can we tolerate having these people in our countries that do this to our children? Girls regularly went missing from home, causing great distress to their families, and became secretive and aggressive as they often came home under the influence of drugs and alcohol, Leeds Crown Court heard during the course of trials held throughout 2018. And of course, these girls aren't going to want to tell their parents that they're addicted to drugs. But that's the fact of the matter. So their parents are wondering why they're being so secretive. Why are they being aggressive about this? Why aren't they telling the truth about it? Well, they can't because they got themselves hooked on heroin, which means that they themselves will be seen as more of a criminal than the Muslims that are raping them. And this happened in lots of instances. The girls themselves were treated like criminals. And of course, that means that these girls would be terrified as well, but that these pimping gangs could tell the police that they were on drugs. So again, or they tell their parents that they're on drugs. So you got this extra fear factor that's there as well. Judge Jeffrey Marson QC said these were planned offences by a large group of Asian men. Now, what we've got here, we've got, what is it, 10, 15 people here. They're just the ringleaders. There will have been hundreds and thousands of other brown men that were paying to have sex with these girls that these girls were unable to identify. And this is going on in the non-white communities, and none of the non-whites have come forward and said this is going on in our communities. We've got these grooming gangs. None of them have come forward. This has all come about through the white girls themselves and through nationalists drawing attention to this. It's the whole community that is covered up for this, the whole Muslim community, the Somali community, the Pakistani community. They all stick together and cover up for their own people because it's their brothers and their uncles and their cousins that are doing it. Having been plied with alcohol and drugs, the girls were raped. They were trafficked to isolated areas or to houses for the purpose of sexual abuse by those who took them or by others. When taken to isolated places such as the moors or a reservoir, if they didn't comply, they were on occasions beaten. They were told they would be left to make their own way back. Children on their own, children late at night in isolated areas. And it says here they were beaten. Remember, they were at the Rotherham trial, one of these girls was branded. She was literally branded. They heated up a hot iron with an M shape on it for Muhammad and branded her backside in the same way that you brand your property, you brand your livestock. That's because these girls are treated as slaves. This is modern slavery. We see all this nonsense about, oh, we must feel terribly sorry for these poor Africans that are brought over here to be slaves to the Arabs, or these poor gypsies that are in slavery. What about our white girls? This is the slavery that's going on. These Muslim rape gangs, these girls that they have groomed and are then trafficking around the country, they are white slaves. White slavery is far more of a pressing subject that needs to be talked about and dealt with than people bringing over Africans and taking away their passports so that they can work as house cleaners. Because that's all that's going on. They're working as house cleaners or being forced to sleep with lots of filthy Muslims. Being forced to sleep with lots of Muslims is far more of a crime than having to do house cleaning for free, which is usually the sort of slavery story that you read about in the British press. The judge added they were taken to so-called parties at houses where there would be older Asian men Again, they were plied with alcohol and drugs. On occasion, drinks were spiked, and many times these girls were rendered senseless. They would then be taken to a room where one by one, men would go and abuse these girls sexually. Sometimes no contraception was used. Sometimes plastic bags were used as condoms. It was disgusting and degrading. The judge added, it is likely that many, if not all, of these girls will never recover from the abuse that they suffered. Now, what they're pointing out here is it's the abuse by these Muslims. But what about the abuse by the British state? What about the abuse by the government that brought these people into our country, knowing that this is the way that they behave? And this is the scandalous thing. It's not as if this is a shock that Muslims and non-whites are behaving like this. They have always behaved like this. It's gone on right the way through history, as we'll get into in part two. We've got some examples here. The trial heard one girl who had been taken into care was abducted from the home by the gang, supplied with drugs and made to perform oral sex. So why wasn't she being looked after in the care home? After she returned, the care home received a phone call and a foreigner asked for the girl, telling the care home staff, tell her I want to F her. The carer told them it was illegal and the girl was only 12 years old. The slave owner's response was to say, that's nothing to do with you, we want her back, just let her go or else. Nothing was done about it. A girl abused from the age of 11 was abducted by the grooming gang while in social services care and found herself under arrest when police tracked her down during a rape ordeal. So the police arrested the girl herself at the age of 11. The girl was repeatedly snatched from a children's home, drugged and locked up in rooms where she was used for sex. She wept while recalling a horrific assault aged 12 when she and another girl were lying on a mattress in a house after being fed 5 to 10 ecstasy tablets and given neat shots of vodka. She would be passed around older Asian men who would pester her for sex on the street and tail her in their cars. See, they just couldn't get away from this. They couldn't get away from these savages because they were in their towns. They were in their towns. And you think nobody else would have wanted to know these girls either because of the people that were following them around. They would have had a bad name. People wouldn't have wanted to know them. And it's all because they were addicted on drugs. I mean, these girls, they have no way out. Must have been really, really horrific for them. One victim told the jury that she was raped during Truth or Dare games organised by ringleader Amar Dhaliwal. She said one attacker laughed up after being given his dare, but then forced himself on her in front of the others, who thought it was hilarious. See, they're just treating these girls like absolute dirt, raping them in front of the rest of them. The teenager was a victim in 33 counts featuring many of the 20 defendants. She was just 13 and waiting at a bus stop in her school uniform when she was approached by three of the men. Young and impressionable, she was flattered by the attention of the adults who gave her cigarettes, then drink and drugs for sex. Judge Jeffrey Marson, QC, told how the girls were made to feel special by the group's flattery and fell into their trap as a result of their youth and naivety. One of these victims said she came into contact with the group after being bullied at school and said she did sort of like the attention they were giving her. But the same girl said that her relationship with some of the defendants became one of those things that you just couldn't get out of. Another victim who had a similar experience told the court how the outings with the predators initially made her feel grown up, adding, but we weren't really, we were young. But when you are young, you do think it is cool to be doing them things, going against what your mum says, and stuff like that. During his sentencing remarks, Judge Marson told how the girls would be taken to isolated places where defendants could threaten and beat them if they failed to comply with their demands for sex. At house parties, victims would be plied with alcohol and drugs before being sexually abused one by one by the men, sometimes with no contraception or with a plastic bag being used as an alternative. Describing the experience as disgusting and degrading, the judge told how girls would wake up naked or partially clothed and unaware of what had happened to them. One girl said, "It was just like a continual lifestyle. I didn't know how to get out of it. You feel manipulated and scared in a way that if you don't meet these guys, then something bad is going to happen. You'd see people with knives or fighting. So you do feel scared and you do feel intimidated. But on the other side, you feel like you want to be a rebel because you're that age. They're quite manipulative. And when you're in that situation, you are so pressured, you feel so stupid and dirty and horrible." The judge said that one 13-year-old was found in the road totally incapacitated and incoherent and was later drifting in and out of consciousness and crying. 13 years old. And another thing that they're not saying in this is the threats to the families. We've also had that in cases that we've heard about. These groomers, they will threaten to attack the family if the child does anything about it. And in actual fact, there was a house that was burnt down. There have been family members that have been murdered. This is another side of it. It really is slavery. These girls really do cannot see that they can find any way out. Anyway, that brings us to the end of part one. So time for a bit of a music break to cheer us up a little bit from this horrible, horrible subject matter. This is a Brazilian synthwave producer called 26 Hate, and this is called Violence. And I'll be back in about 5 minutes. Okay, welcome back. You were just listening there to 26 Hate and the rather aptly named Violence for what we're talking about today. Grooming gangs and white slavery. Now, Huddersfield, where we've just been talking about this case, this is just one in a long string of these cases and these instances going on in Britain. And still we've seen no deportations. The danger is that we look at this and we look at what's happened in Huddersfield and we say, oh yes, well, this is terrible that there's just this, that there's something wrong in that community in Huddersfield. It's not just in Huddersfield though. It's all over the country. I've got a list here, a helpful list of some of the places where this has been going on. Rotherham. The issue of child abuse in the town first came to light in 2010. Well, it first came to light when it was investigated in 2010, but the BNP were trying to draw attention to it in the year 2000. And before then, 20 years ago, people were trying to draw attention to this. It's only recently that anything's been done about it. 5 Asian men were jailed for sexual offences against underage girls. A 2014 inquiry found there were more than 1,400 victims of grooming and sexual exploitation in Rotherham between 1997 and 2013, and there were just 5 Asian men jailed. Rochdale, the trial of 9 Muslims for grooming young white girls for sex attracted widespread public outrage and sparked a national debate when they were convicted in 2012. The gang received jail sentences of between 4 and 19 years for offences committed against 5 girls aged between 13 and 15 in and around Rochdale between 2008 and 2010. The case returned to the public consciousness earlier this year when the BBC broadcast its 3 girls drama based on the experiences of some of the victims. And don't forget, these victims that have actually come forward, it's only a minority of them that are brave enough to actually come forward. There are thousands and thousands of them that we don't know about. Newcastle, a total of 17 brown males and 1 mixed race female were convicted of or admitted charges including rape, supplying drugs and inciting prostitution in Newcastle last year. Older men preyed on immature teenagers who applied with cocaine, cannabis, alcohol or methadone, then raped or persuaded into having sexual activity at parties known as sessions. The case raised huge controversy after a convicted rapist was paid almost £10,000 of taxpayers' money to spy on the parties where underage girls were intoxicated and sexually abused. Northumbria Police launched a major investigation after receiving information from social workers and initially spoke to 108 potential victims. Over the course of 4 trials, 20 young women gave evidence covering a period from 2011 to 2014. And this is absolutely massive. And you think of the costs of taking them to court and taking them to these trials. Surely it would save the country all this money just to deport them all. Just deport them all. Why take that risk? Why take that risk that this is going to go on, that you are putting our young children at such massive risk here by bringing these people into our country? And for what? So that we can have kebab shops? Just send them all back. In Oxford, a group of Muslims who abused teenage girls in a vehicle they called the Shag Wagon were jailed for a total of nearly 90 years in June this year. The men, aged 36 to 48, befriended vulnerable girls as young as 13 before plying them drink and drugs at parties in Oxford. The 8 men, branded predatory and cynical by a judge, were jailed for between 7 and a half and 15 years each. So this is all children that this is going on with. I mean, some people will say, oh yes, well, you know, these were young slappers, they were putting it about. But you're talking 11, 12 and 13 years old. Yeah, children. Don't forget, you cannot give informed consent to have sex until you're over 16 in Britain. Bristol, some 13 Somali men were jailed for more than a total of more than 100 years after they were convicted in 2014 of running an inner-city sex ring. Victims as young as 13 were preyed upon, sexually abused and trafficked across Bristol to be passed around the men's friends for money. So this isn't just a Pakistani thing. This isn't just an Indian thing. This isn't an Arab thing. I mean, these are the Somalis that are getting in on it now. The Negroes are getting in on it. Aylesbury, six non-whites were jailed in 2015 for grooming vulnerable underage white girls between 2006 and 2012. The Old Bailey heard victims would be plied with alcohol and forced to perform sex acts for as little as the price of a McDonald's. Peterborough, a total of 10 Muslims were convicted of child sex crimes in the town, including predatory restaurant boss Mohammed Kubib. He was jailed for 13 years at the Old Bailey in 2015 after he was found guilty of forcing a 14-year-old girl to perform a sex act on him and 9 counts of trafficking for sexual exploitation involving girls aged from 12 to 15 between 2010 and 2013. And finally, Telford, who I believe I discussed this case with Alex Davies, if you want to look back in the archives to find it. Earlier this year, Telford became the latest town to become the focus of the now sadly familiar stories of abuse. A Sunday Mirror investigation concluded that around 1,000 children could have been sexually exploited in the Shropshire town over a 40-year period, leading to calls for a public inquiry. You know, Telford really isn't that large. 1,000 white children groomed and raped by these monsters. And as I've been saying all along, this is something we should have expected from them. This is typical non-white behaviour throughout history. Throughout history, this goes on, and you only have to look it up on Wikipedia to find that. So why isn't it being called what it is? White slavery. This comes from Wikipedia, Muslim Historic Slavery. Ohio State University history professor Robert Davis describes the white slave trade as minimized by most modern historians in his book Christian Slaves, Muslim Masters, White Slavery in the Mediterranean, the Barbary Coast and Italy, 1500 to 1800. Davis estimates that 1 million to 1.25 million Europeans were enslaved in North Africa from the beginning of the 16th century to the middle of the 18th by slave traders from Tunis, Algiers, and Tripoli alone. Don't forget, these numbers do not include the European people which were enslaved by Morocco and by other raiders and traders of the Mediterranean seacoast. And also roughly 700 Americans were actually held captive in this region as well as slaves between 1785 and 1815. Davis's numbers have been challenged by other historians, such as David Earle, who cautions that the true picture of European slaves is clouded by the fact the Corsairs also seized non-Christian whites from Eastern Europe. So we only have the figures for those who had been Christianized. Don't forget, there are also, at this time, in Eastern Europe, we had white people that weren't Christian. From bases on the Barbary Coast, North Africa, the Barbary pirates raided ships travelling through the Mediterranean and along the northern and western coasts of Africa, plundering their cargo and enslaving the people they captured. From at least 1500, the pirates also conducted raids along seaside towns of Italy, Spain, France, England, the Netherlands, and as far away as Iceland, capturing men, women, and children. On some occasions, settlements such as Baltimore, Ireland, were abandoned following the raid, only being resettled many years later. Between 1609 and 1616, England alone had 466 merchant ships lost to the Barbary pirates. Now, this is going on at sea, and these are these Muslim pirates that are coming over in their ships, and they're beaching their ships on the shores of Europe, running off and grabbing whatever they can, and then taking them back to Africa. How much easier is it for them now? They don't have to run their ships up onto the beach. They've been invited over here by our governments. Our own governments have invited these people to come and live among us. And what do when they live among us? They take our children and turn them into sex slaves, exactly as they've always done. All we've done is made it a lot easier for them to do it. And the British government has covered up for it. They cover up for it and pretend that, this goes on in all communities. This isn't something that's particularly non-white or Muslim. It has a whole history in Islam to do with these sex slaves. While Barbary corsairs looted the cargo of ships they captured, their primary goal was to capture non-Muslim people for sale as slaves or for ransom. Others were sold into various types of servitude, captives who converted to Islam were generally freed, since enslavement of Muslims was prohibited, but this meant that they could never return to their native countries. This is why it's supported by Islam. These grooming gangs are supported by them, because if these girls were to say they were Muslims, then the Muslims wouldn't be able to do it to them. So it encourages people to become Muslim. So of course they support it. 16th and 17th century custom statistics suggest that Istanbul's additional slave import from the Black Sea may have totaled around 2.5 million from 1450 to 1700. So don't forget that that was just the Barbary Coast. You also had what was going on in Istanbul with the Ottoman Empire. So you're talking 3 to 4 million white slaves. And of course, the majority of these that they wanted were the white women. It was the white women that got the most money, and it was the white women that most of them wanted as a slave. They didn't need white males to be doing work for them. They just wanted white women so that they could rape them. And they haven't changed. And there's justification for this in the Quran. And this justification goes back as well through the centuries. In 1785, when Thomas Jefferson and John Adams went to London to negotiate with Tripoli's envoy, Ambassador Sidi Haji Abdurrahman, they asked him what right he had to take slaves in this way. And he replied that the right was founded on the laws of the Prophet, that it was written in their Quran that all nations who should not have answered their authority were sinners, that it was their right and duty to make war upon them wherever they could be found, and to make slaves of all that they could take as prisoners, and that every Muslim who should be slain in battle was sure to go to paradise. So the Quran tells them to do this. And they can try and say today, oh, well, moderate Muslims, and the Quran doesn't say this, but it does say this. And the Quranic scholars repeat that the Quran does say this. You still have slavery in Saudi Arabia. You still have ISIS carrying out slavery. You still have Boko Haram carrying out slavery. You still have it in Mauritania. And the idea that they can just, that they can take whites nowadays, because in Africa, in Mauritania, it was always Negroes. It was the Negro slave trade and the Negroes going to the Arabs. But now it's whites. It's white slaves that are worth the money. It's white slaves that people are going for. That's what gets the money. That is what we have facilitated by allowing these creatures into our countries. That's what our government have done to us, by allowing them into Britain. And this isn't just going on in Britain. This is going on wherever you find Muslims, wherever you find non-whites. You will find this going on. You'll find this going on in Sweden. You'll find this going on in France. It's entirely predictable that it will go on wherever you have non-whites. I dare say you probably the same thing would eventually go on with the Chinese and the Japanese when they get enough of them. I know they have a history of slavery. And what we're particularly talking about here, of course, is sex slavery. And again, this comes from Wikipedia. Even after several measures to ban slavery in the late 19th century, the practice continued largely unabated into the early 20th century. As late as 1908, female slaves were still sold in the Ottoman Empire. Sexual slavery was a central part of the Ottoman slave system throughout the history of the institution. And you've now got Erdogan in Turkey. He's trying to revive the Ottoman Empire. He wants to be the big sultan. Of course, you've got the slave markets that have been going on in Syria, in the areas that ISIS have taken over. And it's the Yazidi slaves that they want. It's the white eye, the white women with the green eyes and the blue eyes. That's the slaves that they want. They don't want Negro slaves. They don't want Negresses. They've never wanted them. Girls described as fair and light-skinned were the most expensive to buy, reaching up to £500 sterling, and were most popular with the Turks. Second in popularity were Syrian girls with their dark eyes, dark hair and light brown skin, and they came largely from the coastal regions in Anatolia. Their price could reach up to £30 sterling. They were described as having good figures when young. Nubian girls, that's negresses. Nubian girls were the cheapest and least popular, fetching up to £20 sterling. So a white girl was £500 sterling and a negress £20 sterling and a Syrian girl £30 sterling. And we've invited these people into our countries where they can take our women for the price of a bag of chips. They give them some chips, they give them a few chips, they buy them a few Cokes, they roll them a joint, tell them that it's got cannabis in it and it's got heroin in it, and that's it, they're hooked. And that girl is now then their slave. They haven't even had to pay out £500 sterling for them. They've managed to get them effectively for the price of a bag of chips and then spending the time with them and lying to them and pretending to be their friends. You see, it used to be hard. It used to be quite a struggle for them to get these white slaves. But thanks to the British government, they've made it a piece of piss to get yourself a white slave nowadays. Throughout the 18th and 19th centuries, sexual slavery was not only central to Ottoman practice, but a critical component of imperial governance and elite social reproduction. Dhimmi boys, taken in the Devsirme, could also become sexual slaves. This nonsense about Islam being against homosexuality and throwing queers off the roof, homosexuality is instituted in Islam. They just don't call it homosexuality. These Dhimmi boys, they can do what they want with these boys as well. It's the same as happens in Afghanistan, where they just rape young boys over there. And we've had the instances of that now happening in Germany, with young Afghan boys doing it to German boys, because that's what they've seen happen in Afghanistan. And it's all about dominance and submission. They don't pretend that there's this, that it's an equivalent to a heterosexual relationship. It's all about dominance. It's about sodomizing somebody in the same way that a male dog will sometimes mount other dogs to show that he's the dominant one. And this is the barbarity that we're looking at here. These creatures, they are little more than animals. They're not like us. They're nothing like us. We need to separate ourselves from them. These Dhimmi boys could also become sexual slaves. They usually worked in places like bathhouses and coffee houses. They would become masseurs, that's a telak, or a kocek, a cross-dressing dancer, or a saki, a wine pourer. But that was only for as long as they were young and beardless. So you're talking children here. They would dress young boys up as females and bugger them, cross-dressing dancers. And this is going on legally, legitimately, as an accepted part of the Islamic Empire that they like to look back on as the golden age of Islam, the Ottomans. This was going on back in the 20th century. Literally, just 100 years ago, this was going on. So how can they say that they weren't expecting the Muslims to behave like this when they came into our country to set up their kebab houses, set up their curry houses, set up their minicab businesses and their window cleaning businesses? How can the British government say that they weren't expecting them to do this? This is completely out of the ordinary. We must have an investigation into this. We don't need an investigation into this. All you have to do is look back at history. Just look at these people's culture and what is acceptable to them, and then you'll have your answer as to why this is going on in Britain and the rest of Europe. About the closest that you'll actually get to an admittance that this is an Islamic problem, as I said earlier, is with groups like Boko Haram and Islamic State. They will admit that they are actually taking slaves. They admit that they have captured and enslaved thousands of women and children for sexual slavery. What about the 1,400 white girls in Rotherham? Don't they count? Can we not say that in Britain, thousands of white girls have been captured and enslaved? Surely we must be able to say that. I can remember seeing that there was one newspaper headline that said it could be up to 1 million young white girls have been groomed and raped by these Muslims. So it's up to a million young white girls that have been captured into slavery in Britain. Okay, some of them may have been able to escape from it, but a lot of them never have. This is what's going on here in Britain. It's just they call it by a different name. They call them grooming gangs, and they call it rape. Whereas in the Quran, it's just a slave. You can do that to anyone who is a non-Muslim. In 2014, both groups, that's Boko Haram and the Islamic State, were reported to have kidnapped large numbers of girls and younger women. And it's not as if the Muslim world is saying, well, this is terrible and this shouldn't go on. We've got Muhammad Kutub, who is a famous Muslim scholar. He has vigorously defended Islamic slavery, telling his audience that Islam gave spiritual enfranchisement to slaves. And in the early period of Islam, the slave was exalted to such a noble state of humanity as was never before witnessed in any other part of the world. So he's saying that these Christian dhimmis, these young boys forced to cross-dress and be buggered, that was a noble state of humanity that was never before witnessed in any other part of the world. He has also contrasted the adultery and prostitution that you see in the Western world, what he calls the most odious forms of animalism, casual sex that you find in Europe. He has contrasted that with what he called that clean and spiritual bond that ties a maid, i.e. a slave girl, to her master in Islam. And I think that explains it, really. That shows you that they think that these grooming gangs, they think that is far better to have these grooming gangs and these white girls being raped and hooked on heroin. That's far better than the casual sex that you see in Europe, the adultery, the divorces, and the prostitution. They see what they do with those white girls as being moral. They see it as being a moral act to groom a white child for sex slavery. They think that is preferable. That's the way society should be. I mean, you just cannot have multiculturalism. You can't have diversity because we are entirely different to these people. Our morals are completely the opposite of what theirs are. They are immoral. They are unethical. They will justify this sort of behaviour and call it noble. And they are literally saying that grooming young white children is a noble state of humanity as was never before witnessed in any other part of the world. This is positive to them. This is why you won't see them condemning it. And for our governments to say that they were not aware of this, they didn't know that Muslims were like this, and to try and silence people like Tommy Robinson, who pointed out, just shows you that they are complete hypocrites and traitors. And they should be tried as traitors. They should be tried as traitors, and they should have the traitor's fate. And every one of the non-whites, they should all be repatriated back to the countries where they come from. It doesn't matter if you've got the odd one that doesn't behave like this. It doesn't matter if 60% of them don't behave like this. You've still got 40% of them that do. And even if you only had 1% of them that do, that's still no reason to bring that danger and that threat into our homelands. They've got to go, all of them. Anyway, that brings me to the end of the podcast today. Don't forget that we do require your donations to keep Radio Aryan going, and we do have a Bitcoin wallet, and we are very grateful for those of you who do regularly contribute. You can find that Bitcoin wallet at the bottom of every article. And if you can't afford to send us Bitcoin, then don't forget to write to our prisoners of war, and you will also find in the sidebar at radioarian.com, there's a link there which says write to our prisoners of war. And we've got a lot of addresses there of young nationalists that are in prison for silly crimes such as putting stickers up or highlighting Jewish crimes or just making jokes on Facebook, ridiculous things. And it really does make their day if you can write to them, especially if you can start up a conversation with them and give them an email address that they can write back to, That's what they really like. If you can't do that, then yes, just send them an anonymous card or an anonymous letter, because that's still going to make their day and let them know that they haven't been forgotten about. So if you want to help Radio Aryan, there's two things you can do. You can either donate to our Bitcoin wallet, or you can write to the prisoners of war. So please do one of those if you can. Thank you very much for listening. I will be back next week, hopefully with Max Musson, for more Aryan Britannia. And of course, I do hope you all have a great week ahead of you.
You are listening to Radio Aryan, for an alternative to the anti-white system, on RadioAryan.com.